I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword LoveSport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio. It's me, Joe Forrester, here with you until 11 p.m. Tonight is the night when the fans have their say, because of course Love Sport is your station giving fans a voice. Every night from 7 p.m. we put your club in focus. Tonight it's the turn of Chelsea. Just heard those boys. Leeds coming up now. Cardiff, Brighton, Sheffield Wednesday and Huddersfield. The fan shows on Love Sport. We've got your team covered with Churchill Business Insurance. Take the stress out of managing your van insurance with Churchill. Our comprehensive policies offer you peace of mind, 24-hour accident recovery, £500 cover for loss or damaged audio equipment, plus guaranteed repairs for 5 years. Visit the van page at churchill.com. Yep, it is now time for the Leeds fan show. And as I was saying, no team has been more central in the promotion, relegation, what's going to happen, fallout and the controversy generated by the coronavirus surrounding football. Leeds United and questions about whether themselves or West Brom would be automatically promoted, whether promotion would be frozen to the Premier League next year. What does that mean for the teams in the playoff? Because, of course, no guarantee that either side are going to finish in automatic promotion places. Well, of course, we now know that Championship clubs are unanimously behind trying to complete the season despite the coronavirus outbreak. So we know that the season will get completed. The big question remains, though, when will the season be back underway? The rulings from the Football League and from the Premier League indeed have stated that the ban can go on indefinitely. Football currently suspended until April the 30th, but they will finish the season no matter what comes. Of course, that starts to be slightly problematic should the season not get underway again till September, October. Leeds with nine games left to play in the Premier League, sorry, I should say, about 12, 13 games left to play in the Championship. What does that mean for Leeds United? Obviously, that's going to affect a promotion run in. So much fallout, of course, from this virus, which is affecting every facet of life, football included. Here with me on the Leeds fan show this evening, John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Good evening, John.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Pretty good, thank you, John. Pretty good. Thank you for being with us this evening. Really topsy-turvy time, chaotic time for everybody, I'm sure, as I said, it impacting every element of life, and that includes football. We do now know that football is going to be suspended in the UK until the 30th of April at the very least. But we do also know, because of the ruling from the EFL and from the Premier League, that the season will be completed. Does that provide you any comfort knowing that Leeds will, even if it's, I mean, in 4 or 5 months' time, still get to carry on this promotion tilt?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's a sensitive topic, obviously. There's a lot of problems for people all around the world and tragedy happening in Italy at the moment. Mm. So it seems a hard topic to really talk about, to think about, well, when should we get the football season going again? At this point, it would just be nice to see life returning back to normality, wouldn't it?
But yeah.
I think a lot of my Leeds fan supporting friends have been quite comforted by the fact that the season is going to finish and the first 75% of the season that we've just had hasn't gone to waste. I think that's true, obviously, and it would be good to see Leeds going into the Premier League. But there's still lots of questions that need to be answered and remain unanswered. And some of which will be, what will the state of the team look like by the time things eventually come around to happening again? What's the footballing pyramid going to even look like? It could be the case that we come back and teams have dropped out, unable to pay their players and their staff, and we could see a really raggedy footballing pyramid at the end of that as well. So it's going to be a brave new world when we come back to football, and whilst it would be great to see Leeds promoted, I guess we'll need to know a little bit more about what everything's going to look like by the time it actually happens.
Yeah, you mentioned what the team's going to look like. Now, obviously, it's a problem that's facing all football clubs. Now, most player contracts and staff contracts, indeed, are up for renewal on the 30th of June. That's the cycle that football follows. Now, of course, that's because it's slap bang in between the seasons. As things stand, if football gets underway in June, then there's a chance that Leeds and dozens of other clubs might have players sold from underneath them once it goes past the 30th of June for that run-in. Or if we start again even later, say August or September, the Leeds team that are preparing for that run-in of the last few games might have dramatically different personnel. Also, how do you sign players if you don't know whether it's going to be for a Premier League season or a Championship season? It raises so many conundrums, doesn't it, John?
It does, and there's even questions that haven't really been raised yet, which is things like, we've seen a lot of footballers coming down with this virus. We don't know what the long-term implications on their health are going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
We're seeing people who are developing respiratory conditions, whose lungs are basically taking a beating while this virus goes through them. And, you know, we could come back in 6 or 12 months' time with a huge amount of players who just aren't able to play the game anymore as well. So there's so many questions that are raised by it. Like you said, you've mentioned the contracts. We don't know what's going to happen with these sort of extensions that are being touted. We don't know if players are going to stick around, if players are going to want to move on to other clubs, or already had, I guess, clubs eyeing them up for when their contracts ran out. So, again, we don't really know what the business side of things is going to look like there. But there's just so many questions, I think, that are raised that it's very hard to talk in any sort of concrete sense until we really know exactly when the end is in sight. And I guess at that point you sit back and say, well, where do we go from here?
You mentioned the potential long-term health implications for players and the impact on respiratory systems of players, and certainly that's something that a feature of the virus that we are aware of. I suppose clubs would then find themselves in a situation where if players were unable to compete at the previous level because it was too physically exerting, then clubs would be forced to, I suppose, buy out player contracts. It's an unprecedented situation where a whole group of people are potentially facing dramatic changes in their fitness and their cardiovascular capabilities. There's also so many issues around sponsorship. Do Leeds, from a commercial point of view, go out and hunt for sponsors? And when I say sponsors, it doesn't mean the name on the shirt. Clubs have dozens of different sponsors in dozens of different markets. They're looking for sponsors for the Premier League, how much money they're asking for, what markets are they targeting? So many things to think about. There's also an idea being touted that once football does get underway, that in order to mitigate some of the risk, it might be played behind closed doors. I've watched a few closed doors games, particularly in the last round of Champions League fixtures, which does seem like quite a long time ago. And I really didn't enjoy it as much. It was a very odd experience. What are your thoughts, John, on the potential of an empty Elland Road with a match going on?
Yeah, look, we're in a funny world, aren't we, where the business of football has become so important that it's almost turned the logical order of things upside down. Obviously, when football developed, it was originally a sort of form of escapism for fans, and that was it. There was no money in it. It was something that was done purely for the enjoyment, purely for the ability for people to get out of their lives. And many of those people were people who were working class people for whom it was the sort of highlight of their week. Mm. And we've now sort of got all of these accoutrements of financialization just hanging off the game. And it's funny, isn't it? Because obviously the game still functions as a means of entertainment for the fans. But when you take those fans away and you leave it and you're playing those games simply to get through the season because clubs have to continue with the obligations, legal and financial obligations that they've signed up to each season, it does start looking pretty empty, and it does start feeling as though actually this is just some long rigmarole, some long merry-go-round machinery system that has been set in place by people who want to make a lot of money, and it really has lost that element to it. So I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of playing games behind closed doors, because if the fans can't watch the game, then what's the point of the game? And you know, even if the money is important, the money is only there because of the fans. There's something that Marcelo Bielsa always talks about. He says, yeah, the game has become about money, and we have to make that therefore a results driven business. But the only reason why the results matter is because at the end of the day, the fans are coming, and therefore the these clubs have a sort of heightened significance in the world. So I'm not very comfortable with the idea of an empty Elland Road. I would like to see the fans there. I would like to see them enjoying the game. And I don't really know what you do about that if given that we're in this situation where money has become so important.
There's been a lot of past pros actually talking in the last week, and to be fair to them, they all pretty much to a person have said that it's absolutely pointless without the fans. It's not the same experience for a player on the pitch as well, particularly for a home game. It might be a case, I suppose, of getting this season over and done with as quickly as possible, maybe playing 2-3 games a week. Actually, I know something which is not alien to a team in the Championship, but many Premier League teams might struggle. There's obviously going to be issues as well with general fitness when these players do get back to it, because as much as we've seen, I don't know, Dries Mertens doing squats holding a wine bottle and Paul Pogba playing in his mini basketball court come football pitch in his house, it's not the same as intense team training. So they are going to be well off the pace when they start playing again, aren't they?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, I know Marcelo Bielsa has had his players in as though nothing's changed at the moment, and they've been playing against each other in 11-11 football, and one of the big sessions they do every week is called Murder Ball, where they really go at each other in terms of the fitness stuff. But match fitness is match fitness. Match fitness comes from actually being in those competitive environments where you get one shot to do everything. It's not you don't have that sort of the mental relaxation of being able to say, well, this isn't a game that counts, and you just can't really reproduce that anywhere. A big break, it will be like having the summer break in the middle of a season, then coming back and seeing where people are at. I think as well the pre-seasons will be affected in the following season as well, because there's obviously not going to be able to be the large gap between the seasons that we have at the moment. So it will be quite interesting to see how this impacts people from players from a fitness position as well. And I mean, there's another angle to this, which is there's going to be a whole generation of young players, I mean, all the way through the footballing leagues and all the way down to youth level and down to very young levels, where these players just aren't getting the development they need at very key parts of their careers. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see gaps in the development systems, where if you look through past years, you will be able to say, well, this is the class of 92, this is the class of 93, and there's going to be one of those generations that is probably just missing because they've not had the chance to play football at a point where it was really important for them to play.
Yeah, so many repercussions. Leeds fans, want to hear from you at Love Sport Radio, or give us a ring, 0208 70 20 558. It's the Leeds Fan Show.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Leeds fans, want to hear from you tonight. It's your chance to have your say at Love Sport Radio. Give us a ring or send us a WhatsApp message, 0208 70 20 558. Me, Joe Forrester here. with John McKenzie. Now, John, you caught up with Manuel Veth from Transfermarkt. Tell us why you wanted to talk to Manuel.
So I work for a podcast called Football Today, and we do a sort of daily news football podcast, which takes a story from the news and goes a little bit beneath the surface, gives a bit more context of what's going on. So we really wanted to talk about the impacts of coronavirus on the business side of football. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we've just talked about now. So it was great to talk to an expert from the industry about those things. So that's what we've got 15 minutes of audio here from that conversation.
Absolutely, yeah. So anyone who knows or works in football and likes to analyse the more intricate statistical and financial side, as John said, will know all about Transfermarkt. Here's when John caught up with Manuel Veth.
First and foremost, we have done what everyone else has been doing, and that's coronavirus reporting, right?
Manuel Veth is area manager of the USA for Transfermarkt and covers the Bundesliga for Forbes.
This is something that's impacted every single person, and it's impacted the player market just like everything else. So, you know, we run basically the news that which leagues are suspended and which clubs have suspended, and we have also have like a running order on players that get the virus. At the same time, I think this is kind of like an off-season, so the transfer market has heated up in some ways. So I think our job hasn't changed that much. I think just the stories have changed a little bit, if that makes sense.
There's so many consequences on the financial side of football, it seems hard to know even where to begin. But let's start with the macro level question. So this pandemic is intrinsically connected to the economy. We know that football has become financialized in recent decades. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on what knock-ons the current economic crisis will have on football clubs.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for football clubs is that they very much live in the now. The money that they receive, they is earmarked to spend. Very few clubs around the world are financially viable. One big markets that I cover is, of course, the Bundesliga, the Premier League, and Major League Soccer, as you know, right? Those are the three big markets that I cover on Transfermarkt. And Bundesliga clubs are probably the most prepared for it because they have to be financially viable because they know the money that they earn, that goes to themselves. It's not going to an owner. In other markets, it's a bit more tricky. In England, for example, in the Premier League, the money that they earn is earmarked for spending. In the Championship, the division below, clubs spend about 116% of the money that they earn. So that money is earmarked, right? So money that they're losing right now is going to hurt them significantly. What the exact impact of this is going to be is very, very, very difficult to tell. But I can tell you that if this season doesn't get finished and there's no more football, let's say for 5 or 6 months, a lot of clubs will struggle and we might even see some bankruptcies.
What sort of impact do you think the clubs are going to face from the fact that the season has stopped right in the middle of proceedings? As you've said, a lot of these clubs are primed to operate on the cusp of sustainability. Is there a lot of clubs that won't survive the immediate cash flow issue? Is there a sort of time limit that they can operate for before they'll, as you said, go bankrupt?
That's another one that's really difficult to say. I think that clubs can survive maybe 1 or 2 months without games. I mean, it really also depends on the league. Some leagues are more dependent on attendance numbers than others. Give you an example again, Major League Soccer, they can't survive without people in the stadium. That's why, you know, playing behind closed door is not an option. Whereas the Premier League or the Bundesliga, they can play behind closed door and they would still get the television money, right? So that would allow them to survive, but it would still mean they would lose money, which still would have a big impact on the overall football economy.
One of the questions that I've wondered about actually is that obviously clubs have to plan for a summer break and they have to be sustainable through that summer break. Is there many clubs just forecasting this as being the summer break and then hoping that they can balance the books on the basis of that?
I think that's an intriguing question, and I think that's probably maybe the hope that some of these clubs have. Okay, well, maybe this is our summer break. Premier League is a great example for this. They just extended the season indefinitely, right? We don't know when we're going to be able to play again. Let's say the season finishes in September. I think that the break between the end of this season, whenever the season ends, and the start to the next season is going to be very short. This could very well be the off season, right? Which would allow clubs to financially survive in some ways, because it would basically mean the break that everyone would happen now anyways. And I think that's also why the Premier League and other leagues will do the same. They will all extend the season indefinitely because they cannot lose out on that television money. And if the season gets annulled or gets stopped, they will lose out on that television money. And that would mean bankruptcies, right? So I think that is pretty much what they're kind of trying to do. They're basically saying, okay, well, I guess this is our offseason now. And they're going to treat it like this is our offseason. And that's sort of maybe going to help clubs to be sustainable through this very difficult period.
Of course, clubs are as much businesses in themselves as entertainment ventures these days. You wrote a piece in Transfermarkt recently that suggested that Borussia Dortmund have seen their stocks tumble in value by around 45% since the coronavirus appeared. What sort of effect do you think the coronavirus's impact on the economy is going to have on elite clubs?
Borussia Dortmund is a great example because, yes, yeah, they lost 45% of the stock value, which means that they had a win warning come out that they had to pull back, that they're not expected to run a profit this year. This would have been, I think, the fifth or sixth time in a row that the club would have run a profit, which is, in football terms, is fantastic numbers, right? There's not many clubs out there that can say something like that. I think Bayern and Dortmund, actually, of the top clubs, are one of the only ones that can manage that on a regular basis. So they've basically pulled that back. Now, for Dortmund, that's not going to be a problem. They have so much money stockpiled for a scenario like that, that they're going to be able to survive. They will just have to dig into their savings. That means, of course, that maybe some of the things that they have planned for the offseason will be put on the back burner a little bit for, let's say, maybe a year. And that's going to impact, I think, the economy the most. Clubs are basically saying, okay, well, we have investments planned, but maybe those investments we're going to have to put on hold because of income that we are planning on is all of a sudden gone.
On January the 31st, the transfer window will close.
Join Jim, me and the whole team for all the transfer deadline day news on Sky Sports News HQ.
The question on everyone's mind is going to be, how is this going to affect the summer transfer market? Do you think there'll even be one? Will clubs be unhappy committing for player sales at all? What should we expect from this downtime, as you've called it, this off-season now, in terms of transfer activity?
Clubs can't help themselves. There will be transfers. I've actually heard from several sources that clubs are basically using this time to plan, to work on transfers that they maybe would have normally worked on in May. They're working on now, right? And I think that there will be transfers. Now, the transfer market will look different, I think. I think there is less money to be spent. It will be a more cautious market in the past. And some of the big transfers that we were maybe hoping to see, like Jadon Sancho, Kai Havertz, Upamecano, to look at some of the players that I've been looking at, we might not see those transfers this summer. They just might not happen, you know, because clubs will say, like, look, we're not going to get what we want for a certain player this summer because clubs just don't have the spending power. So let's just hang on to the assets. And you will maybe see players extend their contracts with this in mind as well. Players will move. There will be transfers. Players will sign for other clubs simply because clubs cannot help themselves. Players cannot help themselves. But I think this could be a summer transfer window that's not dictated by the big name moves.
It's interesting that you've mentioned Jadon Sancho there, for example. There's obviously another angle here, which is the players themselves are going to be impacted by this. So how do you think players, like you said, Jadon Sancho, a young phenom, how's he going to respond to this upheaval in the markets? Do you think it will end up having a long-term impact on his career?
Well, it all depends on how long it takes, right? How long will this break take? We don't know what COVID-19 is going to do. We have very little understanding of it, and we have very little understanding on how long this break is going to be. What's going to happen, for example, if players get this virus? Are they going to come back to full fitness? We just don't know. There's so many unknowns in this. We can maybe look back at like some other sports where there's been lockdowns. You know, NHL, for example, the National Hockey League in Canada and the United States has locked out its players over labor disputes and canceled entire seasons. The market values of players didn't really change because of, you know, they missed a year, but because of the changing dynamics of the economy. So I think that's really what we need to look out for. We need to look out for what's the economic impact rather than what is the impact on the individual players.
Do you think this is going to make the market more efficient? I'm thinking particularly of players at the end of their careers. Do you think we'll start seeing players retiring early, or players losing places at clubs because of age uncertainty and the fact that clubs have to be careful with their money?
Well, it all depends. I mean, if players are under contract, clubs can't just walk away from contracts. We've seen now a case in Switzerland and Sion where FC Sion has basically fired their entire squad, right? Whether they will get away with this legally is a very big question mark. I doubt it. I think that it's going to be very hard for clubs to sever existing contracts. Players that are on the cusp of their career, you know, if they're going to retire this summer, maybe they're not going to come back when the season comes back. There's a chance of that, right? But in the end of the day, contracts are contracts. And that is maybe perhaps the bigger question. What is going to happen with contracts that are going to expire on June 30th, but the season runs, let's say, to October? We simply don't have an answer to that yet either.
The football calendar obviously is rigidly cyclical, and so the fact that everyone's player contract pretty much ends on June the 30th is going to be impacted here. If the current season is rearranged at a later date, then presumably a lot of players are going to be moved past their expiry dates, and will lead to problems even for players still in contract for a long time yet if the seasons have a long-term knock-on effect. So how do you think clubs are going to respond to this changing in the football calendar?
Well, they will have to talk to their players. My colleague Daniel Busch from Transfermarkt, as we speak, ran a piece on Willian saying he's one of the players. And I did this piece yesterday, right, that his contract is expiring June 30th. That if this season is extended, he will stay at Chelsea and finish the season. Now, contractually, he doesn't have to. It's voluntary. And that's basically what clubs will have to talk to their players and say, look, I know your contract is up June 30th, but we're playing till September 30th. That's not a firm date. I'm just throwing that out there, right? Could you stay on until the season ends and then go into free agency then? Players don't have to do this. Clubs don't have to do it either. They could also say, okay, well, it's June 30th, your contract is up. We don't need you to finish the season. Bye-bye. That's a reality of things. Now, FIFA could say, okay, well, we're going to make it illegal for players to move during that time period. Essentially move the transfer window back, right? That means players cannot be registered at new clubs, but it doesn't actually change the fact that the contracts are still up. So I think this will be basically a player-to-player, club-to-club kind of discussion. Players and clubs will basically have to sit down and discuss the situation and discuss this case by case. And that's going to make it for some very interesting scenarios, I think, once we get past the June 30th deadline.
So do you think we'll see many of the players playing hardball with their clubs when they're trying to extend their contracts in the short term?
I would like to think no. I hope that this extraordinary times means that everyone is in this together. Literally, an entire planet is in this together. We all have to deal with a certain amount of uncertainty. We all have to deal with things that were unexpected to us, different work environments. So I expect that any decent human being is willing to change just a little bit to accommodate this extraordinary time. Does that mean that everyone will comply? I don't know. It's not a question I can really answer, but I think, you know, we've seen it time and time again. Some people might.
What about the free agent market? Because obviously that's going to be expanded as players fall out of contract. Do you think there's going to be a surprising upheaval in squad turnovers and players going elsewhere to sort of cover gaps in squads?
Possibly. I think the free agent market is going to be pretty much the same as always. I mean, it also will depend what will happen to clubs, like what happens if certain clubs go bankrupt. Those players will all of a sudden be free agents, right? Which then, of course, will lead to a massive deflation of the overall transfer market. The price bubble could very well burst if talent is all of a sudden available to a much larger extent. So this is another one where we're saying, like, we've just found out that the season has been extended indefinitely. We don't know when we're going to come back and what kind of health the clubs are going to be in when the football gets underway again, right? And what players are going to be available and what players are not going to be available. It's another one where we're saying, okay, this is an enormous amount of uncertainty.
Have you got much of a sense from how the players themselves are responding to the possibilities thrown up by coronavirus in terms of their employment? Is there much chatter going on around in the news sources?
Yeah, there is quite a bit. You see a lot of players show quite a bit of solidarity. I think that's a positive. You know, the German national team, for example, donated 2.5 million euros towards the fight against COVID-19, right? At Gladbach, a bunch of players decided that they're going to forfeit the salary. You read cases like that throughout the football world. The toilet paper roll challenge that you see on Twitter, for example, you know, all the players are participating. I think for now, you still have a very good sense of solidarity with the players, the clubs, knowing that this is special times. So I think the players are trying to stay as positive as they can and, you know, wait and see approach. I think that's really what you see from a lot of the players at this moment.
What do you think about the unintended consequences of this fallout? Do you think we'll see players refusing to play, clubs having to resort to using youth players, for example?
It will depend on what the situation is like when we come back. Christian Seifert, the CEO of the Bundesliga, said, look, at some point we'll have to start playing. we will have to start playing, otherwise we're going to go bankrupt. And that might include what they call in German Geisterspiele, ghost games, right? Games behind closed doors. That could throw up an entire array of questions, and that what happens if certain players don't feel safe? And what happens if we like have all of a sudden, you know, 2 months to finish 10 games? You know, that's a lot of games, just league games and Champions League, etc., etc. The turnover, the squad will be enormous. There will be a lot of more players playing, and there will be some very random results. And I don't think players are necessarily going to refuse, but I think we're going to see a massive turnover in the amount of players used by different squads. Because when we come back, there will be a lot of games played in a very short period. That's going to probably be the most fascinating aspect of it.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
25 to 9, you are listening to the Leeds Fan Show right here on Love Sports Radio. Don't forget, we've got your team covered with Churchill Business Insurance. Yep, take the stress out of managing your van insurance with Churchill. Our comprehensive policies offer you peace of mind. 24-hour accident recovery, £500 cover for loss or damaged audio equipment, plus guaranteed repairs for 5 years. Visit the van page at churchill.com. Churchill is underwritten by UK Insurance Limited, and Churchill Van is arranged and administered by Brightside Insurance Services Limited. It is the Leeds Fan Show with me, Joe Forrester, here on Love Sport Radio. Still here with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? If you've just joined us, well, where have you been? You will have just missed John chatting to Manuel Vett from Transfermarkt. He's a financial expert, covers the Bundesliga for Forbes, among other things. John, absolutely fascinating chat that you had with Manuel, Manuel there, about obviously all of the financial repercussions. He spoke more broadly about the economy, but particularly about the way that football financially will be impacted and the impact it will have on player contracts, and also something that we're very, very aware of: clubs lower down the football structure all over the continent, struggling financially. And hearing an expert like that talk about it makes you realise how stark and how real the possibility of some clubs going out of business is, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. Just even the ending of the interview, which we didn't actually have on that clip there, but some of the quotes that we've got from Manuel. Just here's one: the world in which we live in is going to be a different one when we walk out of this pandemic. I think we'll walk into a different landscape, and a different landscape will mean that the football we knew before this pandemic will be a different one afterwards. And that's the, I think that's the scary thing, getting your head around the fact that it's not that we're going to come out of this pandemic and everything's going to go back to normal with a capital N. It's going to be a completely different normal. We're not going to have the football pyramid is not going to be the same. There's going to be clubs who aren't in there anymore. There's going to be players who aren't there anymore. There's going to be fans who aren't there anymore. And it's a really incredible state of affairs, really. And I don't think any of us will really get our heads around it until we are there at that time and it becomes the new normal.
Did you get the impression, talking to him, that the financial model around football and potentially the, I don't know, the sponsorship money and the cash first, fans later attitude, that there might be a rethink in the psychology of football and money?
Yeah, again, I've got another quote from him here that he talked about later on during the game. He said, what it will do to our game is hard to say. Maybe it will reshuffle the board a little and maybe make football more competitive. I'm not saying, hooray, we have a pandemic, let's level the playing field, but it could do that. And I think that's there's a real understanding there that when we come out of this, there's going to be an awareness that the financialisation and the hyper-moneyed aspect of football is just going to be unsustainable. You cannot put that amount of money into something that is so, on the face of it, unimportant when it comes to a situation when governments just have let health systems fall into disrepair and we now have this situation where we just don't have enough beds to be able to deal with this pandemic that we have now. So there's going to have to be an awareness that there's a whole new, not even just in terms of our healthcare, but a whole new restructuring of the economy in general. We've had a big news announcement today from the Chancellor that, huge amounts of government money are going to go towards paying people wages who aren't working during this pandemic. There's no way you can come out of this sort of time frame and move into a new time and go back to that, because people just won't have it. People will say we have to be much more aware of the fact that we live in a society, that we are dependent on one another, that the people that we didn't think were important, those people working in supermarkets, those people who are driving ordinances around here, there and everywhere, those people who are doing the jobs that you just don't ever see and don't ever think of, they're fundamentally important to our economy. And so, yeah, it's going to be really fascinating seeing what happens when we come out of this, in terms of the assumption that some people deserve to get paid millions and millions of pounds in wages and other people don't deserve that at all. When something like this happens, you really realise that everyone in society has their important role to play.
Is this an issue of, I suppose, that we all, I mean, to a much lesser extent than huge financial institutions and corporations and football clubs, we're all slightly culpable. And I know this is incredibly reductive, but there is a, I suppose, a model of supply and demand, of footballers command such astronomical wages and football clubs make so much money and the TV deals are so big because we all continue to watch the game and therefore supply it with money in the 1,000 ways it knows how to make money out of us. So we as punters, as viewers, as consumers of football, have perhaps prioritised that over things that are more important. And do you think maybe that's an attitude that among us fans might change?
You have a bit of a bugbear about this, actually, okay. Because I think that the big problem here is it's easy to blame the fans and say, well, you know, if you weren't going along, then football would never have been able to have done this. But that we have structures of governance in place in order that this sort of thing shouldn't happen. The reason why we have governments and we have governing bodies is to regulate markets and to regulate whatever's going on, to make sure that we don't get that huge swing in inequality. And I think we all know that in the last couple of decades, the reason why we've ended up here isn't because people the people in general are willing to go along with it. It's that governments haven't spent money on health services. Governments haven't stopped big corporations from being able to cream off profits and letting the little guys just lose out at the end of the day. So I think I agree with your sentiment that we as fans have to take this moment and say and stamp our own view of the game onto it a bit more. We've let things go to a certain extent insofar as we haven't really raised questions about the way that the game has gone. And this is as good a moment as any for us to start joining football supporter groups and actually imposing our ideas on the ownership structures. But I'm going to be very, very unsympathetic when people suggest that maybe the fans are almost to blame for this, because I do think that it is governments, it is league, Premier League should have been doing that, FA should have been doing that, FIFA should have been doing that, UEFA should have been doing that. They should have thought about this, and they've just let it get out of hand. And the only way there was ever going to be that restructuring of the balance was by something terrible like this happening.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I suppose what I'm thinking in terms of my own experience of being a football fan is that I suppose that I, in a way, I think as millions of others will feel, and listening to Mamel talk there, I've sleptwalked into this situation and allowed myself to be exploited by those who are, making football an entirely financial system, as opposed to what it is at its heart, a game which is for the fans and representative of a particular club and a particular community. Listen, do check out the Football Today podcast. At FT underscore podcast underscore on Twitter. It's absolutely fascinating stuff. You can hear John's full chat with Manuel there. Right, let's talk about Marcelo Bielsa. Okay, so you've put out an episode.
My favourite topic.
Yes, of course. Of course, everybody's favourite topic. So you've put out an episode of the show this week, of the podcast this week, looking at Marcelo Bielsa's time at Leeds and the development of the team during his tenure. What would you say your takeaways are?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, actually, and I would recommend people do that. Watch back over some of the games that he presided over at the beginning of his tenure and compare it to now, because I think what's happened is, because last season we were so unsure of what to expect, that when it was so much better than our expectations, we just thought, this is great, this is the best thing we've ever seen. But Josh and I, who run All Stats, aren't we, we're just amazed at how much development there has been since those early games under Bielsa, and looking at where we are now, Leeds as a team, as a tactical system, have really levelled up in this season. And they've played some of the best football that we've ever seen, I think, at Leeds this season. But it's interesting because I think because we went from that scenario where we were sort of relegation fodder the season before Bielsa arrived, we really enjoyed last season because there wasn't really that much expectations on it. Whereas this season we've been expected to win every game. I think the fan base has really struggled to deal with the intensity that sort of brings. So yeah, it was a really fascinating experience to go through.
Yeah, and I suppose the evolution of the team to a certain extent comes with putting to bed the own issues that Bielsa himself has had, because there's always been question marks over whether he works his teams too hard and runs them ragged, and that was certainly the criticism of Leeds from, I suppose, around February last season. Looking and analysing his performances and his tactics, has there been an evolution there in terms of preserving player fitness?
I think he would argue that there was a fitness issue last season. He's always been clear to say that actually we had all of the data available at our fingertips. We know when players are unfit, when they're struggling, etc. And I think for him, the fall off at the end of last season was more of a psychological thing. I think he would maintain that. But to extend your question to sort of the tactical side of things, the difference, I think, between last season and this season is that last season he wasn't really very adventurous at all with his tactics. I don't think he trusted the team to be able to do the sorts of tactical shifts in-game that we've seen this season. And so last season we saw always pretty much 4-1-4-1 and pretty standard shifting in that formation to an attacking 3-3-1-3. But this season we've seen a lot more willingness to actually shift formations, shift during the game, change players and get players playing some really quite complex tactical positions. And so I think that's partially why Leeds have been better this season, because Bielsa has the confidence of his team, just understand him tactically well enough that he can just say to them, right, we're going to do this, and they do it. So, yeah, I think that comes into it a huge amount.
And you can find out even more about the analysis and the evolution of Marcelo Bielsa's tactics while at Leeds on the All Stats, Aren't We? Patreon page. Right, we've got some listener questions next.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Good evening, you are listening to Love Sport Radio. It's the Leeds Fan Show. Remember, you can have your say at Love Sport Radio on social media. Give us a ring, 0208 7020 558. That's also the same number if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Some people have, in fact, been in touch with the show. I'm here with John McKenzie from All Stats, Aren't We? Some ginger guy says, I'm aware it won't happen, but do you think this period would be a good time for fans to organise themselves towards demanding more influence in the game? And how would you go about doing so? Without games, there is nothing but time, and even a move towards the influence that Germany's ultras have would be a huge shift for the better, whilst it would also be providing a foundation for future organisation and help with mitigating the nonsense fans currently put up with at all levels. It is something John touched on earlier, actually, off the back of his interview for Football Today with Manuel Veth from Transfermarkt. But you were saying, John, that you think fan power is perhaps the way to go, and the German model with fan ownership of clubs is potentially an interesting one to pursue here.
Yeah, really interesting, because I think a lot of people have seen the German model as sort of outdated and eventually passing on, not least because Bayern have decided that the model now no longer suits them, and they want to be able to compete with the sort of hyper capital clubs that they play in the Champions League. But I think weirdly, the 50+1 rule, which means that 50% of the owning shares have to be owned by the fans plus one vote. So basically what you're saying there is that the fans are in control of the club. There's nothing that can happen where the fans don't get a say on it. Actually, I think that is going to mean that German clubs will probably be quite resilient when it comes to the situation that we're facing now. Clubs haven't really been able to get into huge amounts of debt, and the fans have always had a say in which way the direction of the club goes. So it should be interesting. As a point that Manu mentioned in the conversation we had was that the Championship clubs spend 116% of the money that they get in every season in terms of revenue. That's just not sustainable. So I do think Germany and the fan approach is probably the best way to go. But yeah, again, I just reiterate my advice in the previous section where I said we need to join supporters clubs. We need to get involved in the actual running of clubs and have our voices heard. And it may feel as though a lot of the time in this society that we've grown up in, that we spend our time involved in democratic processes which don't really make any difference at all, but I think joining your club's supporters trust or whatever will mean that actually we'll be able to have a much more of an impact, I think, going forwards, because I think there is going to be a realization that actually you have to take care of individuals. You can't just talk about people with money. It's going to be the people at the bottom who are just as important to getting everything going. So yeah, join your local, the club that you support, supporters club, would be my advice.
Yeah, and I think it's excellent advice as well. It's interesting, actually. I was on with the guys from AFC Wimbledon last night, and we were talking about the move away from King's Meadow and, of course, Plough Lane, and whenever they do get into the new Plough Lane, although the stadium is still being built, that hasn't stopped due to the current crisis. And the level of emotional investment and also, I must say, contentedness that they feel with their club and the direction their club has taken is really very plain to see and actually quite inspiring. Now, obviously, the worst thing that can happen in the context of being a football fan and supporting a football club happened to them in the sense that their club was ripped away from them. But from those ashes, they were forced to rebuild a club from the ground, and they have ownership of it in the truest sense. Every fan feels personally, emotionally, and in some cases financially invested in the club, and win or lose or succeed or fail, they do it on their own terms. And I think that balance could certainly do with, as you said, John, being returned to football to some extent.
Yeah, I think what's going to be really interesting is seeing what impact this pandemic has on the amounts of money that are in the game. I think one of the things that we talked about in the interview with Manu was how football's value all relies on the fact that these players are going to be playing. Lionel Messi is worth what Lionel Messi is worth because he can do something on a football pitch, which is great when football is being played. As soon as football doesn't play for a year, what's the actual value of that football club? It's absolutely nowhere near what sort of valuation you'd expect it to be. And so you end up realising actually the whole notion of value that football is built on is nothing but smoke and mirrors, really. And that's the scary thing. So I think what's going to happen when we come out of this is that there's just going to be a resetting of the mad capitalization that's happened in football. And it will mean everything is, I think, a lot more affordable in many respects. So clubs like AFC Wimbledon, it's going to be really interesting to see how they do, because suddenly they'll be in control of their club. Their club will be running at a much more efficient rate than other clubs. And you never know, we could start seeing clubs like that are fan-owned actually becoming a bit more of a player in the football market.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's obviously this idea that's been touted about potentially the richest clubs. So in the UK, that being the Premier League, helping the clubs, particularly in League One and League Two and further down the football pyramid. Do you think that the Premier League will allow any of its wealth to go to helping some of those clubs survive?
I don't know if they'll allow it, but it would be great to see them forced to do that. We know that this week, a £17 million bailout was proposed by the teams in the 68 teams in the National League. And it just boggles the mind to think that 68 teams in the footballing pyramid could actually be run successfully for this time on just £17 million, which is what a sort of up and coming starlet, maybe moving from a lower Premier League division to a mid table one. Let's hope that something happens where there is a redressing of the balance. It's been great to see some of the players, particularly again German clubs. I know that Borussia Mönchengladbach players are not taking a salary while the football's not being played. And there's been a couple of German footballers who've set up various coronavirus charity outposts during this time as well. So it would be really good to see football being used as a force for good, and those players realising actually that they have a huge role of responsibility in helping out here. These are unprecedented times, and I think it calls for unprecedented attitudes with respect to other human beings.
I think it's beautifully put. Let's just finally bring it back to the football and to Leeds on the pitch. One last fan question. Billy Reid says, if this season doesn't finish, and I suppose given what's happened, he means doesn't finish soon, do you think there's any chance that Bielsa stays?
Yeah, it's a very difficult one to know. And it's hard enough to talk about whether or not Bielsa would stay on. It seems crazy, right? But even stay on were this season to finish soon. He's an interesting chap. He's never managed a club for longer than two seasons in a row, so he would already be going beyond his longest tenure at any club. It's crazy to think with his storied career that he's actually only about 10 games off his longest stint at a club ever. So, yeah, it's hard to know what he would do. But, yeah, I think he probably will stay. We hope he will, because he's turned Leeds around and we wouldn't be where we are without him.
Hey, listen, John, it's been genuinely, absolutely fascinating talking to you this evening. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So that's John McKenzie there from All Stats, Aren't We? It's the Leeds fan show. There's so much to digest and think about after that Leeds fan show. And Leeds fans, obviously, we talk about your club a lot, but I think just chatting to John, there's so much other stuff in the world of football to consider here. His chat with Manuel Vett from Transfermarkt, the impact that there's going to be on player contracts, sponsorship deals, potentially clubs lower down the football structure folding. Could this be the end of the current financial model in football and a move towards more fan involvement and more fan power and fans having more agency within the game? Really, really fascinating stuff. Thank you to the listeners who sent in questions as well. Right, you are listening to Love Sport Radio. This is, of course, the time when fans have their say. And coming up in a few minutes' time, we've got the Cardiff Fan Show. This is Love Sport. We're gonna see you win. We are so proud. We shout it.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.